Members, if you'd take your seats and prepare for action today, that'd be great. You know, it's a little difficult to squeeze in lunch and get here on a timely fashion, but I appreciate your showing up, and we'll attend to the committee business. The clerk will note the roll as we come and go. The minutes are in our packet, members. Chair would entertain a motion for approval of the minutes. Representative Biskins moves. Discussion? Hearing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. First bill on the agenda for today is House Bill 2528, Representative Mazerall. A bill regarding when folks have accidents that damage state property, the ability of the patrol and MnDOT to share information. Because usually, auto insurance will cover that damage. Won't it, Representative Mazerall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Yes, as you've stated, this relates to the Minnesota Department of Public Safety and the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And the bill is here to require...
Sorry, I teed you up the wrong way there. First, I need a motion to get the bill in front of us, and that would be Representative Vogel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House File 2528.
Going to the Committee on Public Safety as be a next
yes,
stop.
Yes, correct.
Thank you. The bill is in front of us. Now, Representative Mazerall, you can...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Explain the bill.
The bill would require that the Minnesota Department of Public Safety provide an accident report to the Minnesota Department of Transportation if there's been damage to state-owned property as a result of an accident. And I also have, we'll request that we add an oral amendment to the bill as it stands in front of you.
Proceed with your oral amendment.
The proposed amendment would be on line 1.9. Before the new language would be the words upon request. So the new language would read, upon request, the Commissioner of Public Safety shall provide.
Mr. Burris, do you have that for the record?
Mr. Chair, yes, I do.
Good deal. Thanks. Representative Vogel, is that your motion?
That is my motion.
Discussion to the motion. Anyone curious about it? Briefly explain why upon request makes sense, Representative Mazerall or Mr. Rudin, whichever.
Sure, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do that. I'm Eric Burdine with MnDOT Government Affairs. Mm-hmm. And the amendment is a request to the Department of Public Safety. It's not our intention that they would have to go through all accident reports, but rather that we would either have an accident report number and request that specific accident report, mm-hmm. or in some cases we may have a date and a location of an accident, and so we would give them some parameters to search for the accident report.
Outstanding. Thank you. We understand the oral amendment. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The oral amendment is adopted. To the bill as amended, then. Questions of the witness or the testifier? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mazerall, is there, I guess my question is, why are we having to do this? Is there a reason why they can't share that information currently?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Mazerall, you or Mr. Rudin probably speak to that.
Yeah, we'll have Mr. Rudin answer that question. There is a reason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. Just to make clear, this will actually continue what the practice has been. We've been getting these accident reports in the past, but if you look in Chapter 169.09, it talks about a person whose property has been damaged in an accident can get a copy of the accident report. And Department of Public Safety's attorney took a look at that, and technically a person does not include a state agency. And so that has been the issue that has arisen and why we need this legislation to continue being able to access the accident reports.
Representative Nelson, follow up.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe I heard something, a bill similar to this in Commerce last week, insurance companies wanting to be able to get accident reports. And I know I had a little accident this summer with my vehicle that I had to sign off paperwork for the insurance company so they could get it. So I'm just wondering if there's privacy issues there, why those aren't given out more readily. So other than that, I just wanted to know.
All right. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Mr. Rudin, We had some bills waylaid last year because of data privacy things. Is this rise to that level that you think it needs civil laws, data privacy subcommittee to sign off on it?
Mr. Chair, I believe the issue last year that caused that bill to get hung up was that the approach we were taking last year would have allowed MnDOT to access all accident reports and find those that involve damage to trunk highway infrastructure. And that did seem to be a concern for that subcommittee. And so the approach we're taking this year is that DPS would maintain control of the database and only provide us those specific reports upon our request that involve damage to trunk highway infrastructure.
Hence the oral amendment, I see. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rudin, I see in the fiscal note that the Department of Public Safety weighed in. Why didn't the Department of Transportation weigh in on the fiscal note?
Mr. Rudin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I'm not sure I can answer that specifically, but we did pull some information together about the amount of revenue that we do bring in from the damage that's caused on our trunk highway system. And this is just in the metro district. In one fiscal year, we had $668,000 worth of damage that we were able to pursue claims for. Perhaps the reason that fiscal note doesn't show anything for MnDOT is that, as I said, this would continue current practice. The fiscal effect would be if we were not able to continue accessing these accident reports, then we wouldn't be able to pursue the restitution for the damage.
Follow up, Representative Biskin.
Well, just to you, Mr. Chair, this might be an opportunity for you to wheedle Representative Holberg when the time comes.
Okay, I would be very cautious about doing that, Representative Biskins, but thank you for the suggestion. Further discussion to the bill? Advice to the chair? Anything of the sort? Does anyone in the audience feel compelled to testify for, against, or about this bill? And members, I did ask about public safety. Public safety did not respond to the request for a cost estimate, probably because of its ongoing practice, and they respond anyhow when directed, so it didn't seem to be that big an issue. Seeing none, Representative Bogle renews his motion that House File 2528, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Public Safety Committee. All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Masrall, you're on your way to Public Safety. Good luck with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Excuse me. The next bill on the calendar, The next bill on our agenda is House File 2438. Representative Moran, we'll need someone to move the bill for us and then stand ready for the A1 amendment.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Champion moves the bill, and House Bill 2538 will be this one we're going to lay over for inclusion in the omnibus bill number 2. Unless there's turbulence, Representative Moran, then we'll pull this up and send it on its way by itself. Oh, and I've been asked to point out that the language in this was added to Representative Howe's bill in education, so the bill is traveling elsewhere as well, members, so we'll get a two-pronged approach here. Representative Moran, would you like us to move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape you'd prefer?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Representative Champion?
Yes, I so move, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the A1 amendment is before us. Are there questions about the A1 amendment? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The A1 amendment's adopted, and Representative Moran, the bill is in the condition you'd like to discuss it now. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a technical change to adopt the new standards for buses built after December 31st, 2012. The new changes also address the new higher back seats as approved and listed in the 2010 standards and mandated by the National Highway Safety Administration. Additional changes were made to address safe placement of transporters and manufacturer systems and school buses at the request of pupil transporters and manufacturers. Also, there's a fan placement that is addressed because of the extreme weather conditions in Minnesota to ensure safe operations and clear visibility for the driver. The changes are not retroactive and will not require retrofitting of fleets. It's only affect buses manufactured after December 31st of 2012. And so to discuss the amendments to the bill and to create a clear path of the bill, I would like Sergeant Davis to take over from here.
Sergeant Davis, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourselves for the folks watching at home and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Paul Davis, Minnesota State Patrol, Office of Vehicle Transportation Safety. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and representatives, I'd like to just briefly walk through the bill with you as we look at the national standards as adopted. What we're doing is trying to mirror the language that was brought forth during the 15th Annual National Congress on School Bus Transportation Safety. That is a group that meets every 5 years to determine best practices for manufacturing of school buses and the integrity of the vehicle. Each state provides a group to go and sit and be part of that committee. Each state has a voting of one member vote per state. That group represents the public safety folks, safety advocacy groups, bus manufacturers, and so on. The technical changes that we're looking to make here, again, just adopt the national standard. This bill was brought forth and has been requested to be carried by Department of Public Safety from the industry itself. So they are accepting of the bill. We have sat down with them and gone over the specifics, and everything that you see before you is agreed upon by all parties. Mr. Chair, would you like me to go through the individual items as we go along?
Not unless there are specific questions, Sergeant Davis. Are there questions of the testifier or so far regarding? Is there more that you should explain? That I noticed the seat back language was stricken on the size, and I was just looking in the bill quickly to see where they, oh, here they are, over on line 3.141516. Okay, that answers my question.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We are striking that language. That is from the 2005 standard. Mm-hmm. And is now being addressed in the 2010 standard. The seatback height is now going to 24 inches. So if we leave the old language in, it conflicts with the new construction standards.
Understood, and thank you for the cleanup. Members, any further questions for either Representative Moran or Sergeant Davis? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify about the bill? About this house? Well, Brad Lundell. Brad? Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell with the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation. Just very briefly, these are provisions that we've discussed over the last few years since the last Congress of National Standards met. We're in full support of what Representative Moran is doing. We hopefully can get these things into law this year. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Lundell? Thank you for your explanation. Appreciate it. Mr. Kelleher, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. Mm-hmm. I think we are the industry that was described by Sergeant Davis. We met with the State Patrol about 16 months ago to discuss this language. What I think is going on basically is by reference we're incorporating those new national standards for 2010. And the language before you in the bill actually are some of the agreements that are deviations or amendments from those standards that we've all agreed to that we think are appropriate. And that we've been working with the State Patrol on this, and we really would support the bill very much. I would like one caveat, though, Mr. Chair, that on the amendment, the A1 amendment, where the department is moving to a to delete the word point on 1.6, where it would just shall provide a rule, a system for evaluating the effect of safety operation variance and continuous. A lot of people in a lot of different industries don't like change, and then right now there is a current point system to determine whether a bus is available for use for during service, in service during the school day. The department ultimately, I think, would like to go to a pass-fail system, and I'd just like to be on the record that they will be doing that through a rule, and we may be talking about that in future date in this committee, depending on how that works out.
Yes, Mr. Kelleher, rules have become very important to the chair lately, and so we'll be watching for those coming through and discussing those at the appropriate time. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else in the audience like to testify about the issues? Seeing none, Representative Champion renews his, well, I guess you don't have to renew a motion to lay a bill over. House File 2438 as amended is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative
Thank you.
Next bill on the agenda is House Bill 2364. Representative Benson, that is your bill. You can move it, and it will be laid over for possible inclusion also.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move that House File 2364 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. This is an agency bill that is a request for turn back of three legislative routes that be removed from the trunk highway system and then would go to three local municipalities, two counties, and the city of Mr. Lundeen from the department is here today to provide the details.
Mr. Rudine, welcome to the committee again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to remind the committee that the purpose of trunk highway turnbacks is to upgrade trunk highways that no longer serve a trunk highway purpose and allow them to be turned back to the city or county in an acceptable condition. And the turnback program works toward ensuring that the right road is on the right system. These are usually lower volume roads, and so they're not necessarily a high priority for the state, but they are a high priority for the local jurisdiction. So this year we have three roadways that we are proposing to turn back to local units government. One in Wadena County, which is Trunk Highway 227 between Sabika and Nimrod. One in Brown County, Highway 258, which is between Highway 14 and Humphrey. And then Trunk Highway 291 in the city of Hastings, which is between Highway 61 and 10th Street. And the counties and the city are all supportive of these projects. We have letters of support or resolutions of agreement with the local governments on these projects. But because trunk highways are all listed in the statute, we always need to bring a bill pretty much every year to the legislature to allow us to turn back these trunk highways to local governments.
Mr. Rudine, about how many miles are in total are we talking about here? And I'll tell you why I ask, because I believe in law, the length of the amount of miles in the trunk highway system is set in law. Mm-hmm. This will free up some room to make other highways. That's where I'm going with the question.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair, that you're correct. There is a limit of, I believe, 12,000 miles on the trunk highway system. Most of these are very small segments, just a couple of miles each, I believe. So I don't have the exact mileage with me. I'm not sure if Mr. Jonas might have that. But
that's okay. You can memo us later. It'll be fine. Thank you. Got questions of Mr. Rudine or the author of the bill? Concerning Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and either to Mr. Rudine or Mr. Burris. Remind me again the turn back process and why we would see no fiscal note on a bill in which there are turn backs.
Representative Benson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fiscal note was posted at 12:35 today, so it's in the system and it has zeros on it. So maybe they can explain why it's got zeros.
Ms. Johnson, would you like to explain it, or why don't you talk about the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, thank you. My understanding, I just got it in my hand just a few moments ago, and we're making copies at this time, so I haven't had a chance to read it thoroughly, but it did indicate zeros from what I saw.
And Mr. Burris, in the process of turnbacks, usually there's a portion of money appropriated to the body, the governmental body, township, city, county, for a turn back road, isn't there, out of the trunk highway fund?
Mr. Chair and members, there are a couple of funds for turn backs that are appropriated to MnDOT as part of the budget process, and I would presume that those are the funds being used to fix up the roads as part of the turn backs under this bill.
Mr. Rudine, can you shed some more light on that process for Mr. Representative Biskins?
Mr. Chair, just a little background. The funding for turnbacks comes from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. Mm-hmm. There's a 5% flexible fund that sort of comes off the top before the constitutionally dedicated splits of 62% to the Trunk Highway Fund, 29% to county state aid highways, and 9% to municipal state aid streets. So the turnback funding comes out of that first 5%. And so it doesn't need to be specifically appropriated for these projects, but rather it comes to the department in sort of a lump sum. And the funds are used to either upgrade the road so that it's in a good condition when the road is turned back to the local authorities, or in some cases we might make a lump sum payment to the local unit of government if the road is already in acceptable condition, and then they can sort of hold on to that money for future use. But the estimated cost for these three projects, the Trunk Highway 227 project in Wadena County is estimated at $8 million. The Brown County project on Trunk Highway 258 is estimated at $6 million. And the Hastings turnback of Trunk Highway 291 is estimated at $1.625 million.
Representative Biskins, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rudin, do these turnback funds cancel to the general fund at the end of each budget cycle, or are they available for carryover?
Mr. Rudin, are these general fund dollars or they're trunk highway fund dollars?
Mr. Chair, they're actually not trunk highway fund dollars, but they are highway user tax distribution fund dollars, so they would not cancel to the general fund.
It's the 5% off the top of the highway user tax that doesn't go into the trunk highway then. Understood?
It is, but then thank you for that. The second question then, does this fund accumulate from budget session to budget session?
Mr. Rudin?
Mr. Chair and Representative Biskins, yes, presumably if they weren't used, they would stay within that fund to be used for future turn back projects.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for the questions. Further questions for Mr. Rudin or Representative Benson before we lay this bill over for possible inclusion? Anyone else in the audience want to testify about these highway turnbacks? Seeing no one coming forward, Representative Benson, thank you for bringing the bill forward. We'll lay it over for possible inclusion. The next bill on the agenda is House Bill 1955. That's a bill that I'm authoring, and I'm just going to run it from here, and we'll have some discussion about this, and should we choose to pass it, it will be going to public safety. So I'll move House Bill 1955, recommend it pass, and be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety for further discussion. Members, we have a bill that we've passed here over the last, we've actually passed it and amended it a couple times over the past several years. It's called the Move Over Bill. And it came to my attention, two things happened that brought this issue forward for my attention. One is some anecdotal evidence that I heard, and I'm waiting for that research number, and we're going to have some more of it probably by public safety, that the justification for having a bill that says you will move over when approaching flashing lights for either maintenance, emergency, or police vehicles was because we were having incidents where people were striking the people on the shoulder. The anecdotal evidence seems to indicate that since we passed our law, the number of strikes has actually gone up instead of down. While on a couple of cross-country trips this summer through the Midwest and the South, I noticed that several other states have the same kind of signage we have. With this small exception, it says, move over or slow down. And they don't seem to have the same panicky, knee-jerk reaction that we have in Minnesota, where it just says, move over or else is what the implication is. And I thought, you know, in order to come into conformance, especially on our interstate system, with all the other states around us, that we should add the words or slow down to the law as it exists. So I asked Mr. Burris to draft legislation that did that, that left it very clear that our primary interest is that you move over where practicable and safe, but in lieu of that, you can slow down and so comply with the spirit of the law and hopefully keep the folks on the shoulder safe in the process. What we have on the bill here is a fiscal note from public safety that says there will be no cost for implementing this law. Of course there won't be, but my concern is, and this is where I'm a little hesitant to move the bill along, but I think we will anyhow, is that if MnDOT leaves the existing signage as it is, there will be no cost, but if MnDOT goes out and replaces signs at several thousand dollars a crack that says move over or slow down, that could get spendy, and we don't have that fiscal note. With running the risk of putting Ms. Johnson on the spot, Can I ask, was I specifically clear that MnDOT should weigh in, or did they just figure they just leave the signs as they were, or just put a decal on them?
Mr. Chair, I did check with the agency, and the word that I got was that they didn't think that the signs needed to be changed.
Okay.
And I guess I didn't get clarification that that needed to be.
Yes, I could have been more forceful in saying they should have been changed if that was the case. Perhaps we'll just let them go in the regular location, because I do know signs are changed periodically just because. So, okay, Mokes, that's what the chair was already questioning where MnDOT's fiscal note was. Now you've heard the explanation of why MnDOT doesn't have a fiscal note on this. Perhaps the chair should think about whether he wants to make it clear that the signs be changed, if indeed the evidence shows that forcing people to move over is causing more incidents instead of fewer, which is what we're all after. That's the bill in its essence. I'll be happy to stand for questions before we take testimony. While testifiers are, while you're thinking of your questions, does anyone in the audience want to testify for, about, or against this bill? And feel free, please, to weigh in. Seeing no one approaching, and I'm sure in public safety we'll be hearing from public safety in particular, I'll stand one more time for questions from the committee. Seeing none, members, I'll renew my motion that House Bill 1955 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Public Safety. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is on its way to public safety for further discussion. Representative Szymanski, you have House Bill 2631 on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move House Bill 2631 for consideration with the recommendation to pass and be sent to the Ways and Means Committee.
Ways and Means, okay. And I believe there's an A1 amendment. Is that yours, Representative?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there's an A1 amendment simply correcting the date, implementation date, or the trigger dates in the bill.
All right, that sounds like a pretty technical amendment. Discussion of the A1 amendment. Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. A1 amendment's adopted. The bill is in the condition in which you wish to describe it. Representative Szymanski.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 2631 is a bill that establishes a contingent state aid appropriation in the case of a future state government shutdown. County and municipal state aid funds are constitutionally dedicated, and although they do require a state appropriation to be dispersed, but because of constitutional requirements that local highway systems shall be maintained, there's an obligation for cities and counties to continue their operations during a government shutdown. Although the money may be encumbered in a previous biennium at the local level, there are certain roles that MnDOT, Trunk Highway, and state aid staff perform in order for the project to continue operations, such as material certification, plan review, and testing and payment. The bill would authorize the amounts necessary to continue the state aid projects and associated essential work for MnDOT and MMB. With me today, Mr. Chairman, is Mr. Wayne Sandberg from Washington County. Would like to testify on this bill.
Mr. Sandberg, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for those watching at home and proceed, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Wayne Sandberg. I'm the county engineer for Washington County. I'm here today to testify on behalf of the Minnesota County Engineers Association in support of House File 2631. Thank you for having me and providing me time this afternoon. The Minnesota Department of Transportation and local agencies are intertwined partners when it comes to construction. Our county state aid and our municipal state aid funding streams are a key component in our ability to build the local roadway and highway systems. This bill would ensure that these funding streams continue during a future state shutdown. The money this bill intends to appropriate is constitutionally dedicated through the Highway Users Tax Distribution Fund to local agencies. This is not general fund money. This money cannot be spent anywhere else, and keeping these dollars flowing from the Highway Users Tax Distribution Fund bank to locals so they can carry out their mission is the goal. Additionally, making sure we keep our local funding sources available ensures we have the resources to meet our requirements for other funds we may have as part of a project, for example, federal transportation dollars. This is important because in Minnesota, when it comes to construction, our window is small. Every working day we have counts, and all of our contractors operate on a month-to-month financial basis. Our ability to make payments is critical to keep the contractors solvent during the construction process, thus keeping construction moving forward as scheduled, and this bill helps us do that. I am speaking from experience here because during the shutdown of 2011, we worked very hard to keep portions of our $18 million Broadway Avenue project in Forest Lake going. On that project, we had a freeway interchange removed, and we were only partially done building the new one when everything stopped. Had the shutdown gone even one more week, we would have jeopardized our completion dates, and it would have become a two-year bridge closure. As it was, we still spent nearly $200,000 in additional construction costs and county staff time managing the additional project complexities during the shutdown. Now, I mentioned earlier that MnDOT and local agencies are intertwined partners when it comes to construction. We rely on MnDOT expertise that we cannot or do not have on our own. Additionally, all of the materials used on these projects, the concrete, steel, wiring, stoplights, the bituminous paving, everything is tested and certified before we use it. MnDOT provides these services, and this bill would ensure that those services continue. Our goal with supporting this bill isn't to insert ourselves into the politics of state budgeting. Rather, once construction begins, it is important in terms of preventing increased costs, keeping traffic delays to a minimum, and making sure our highways are among the safest in the nation. We want to keep these projects going and moving forward without delay. When we start a construction project at the local level especially, we have made a promise to the residents and businesses of that community that we are going to build that needed infrastructure, support the quality of life and the economic vitality every citizen wants as quickly and with little impact as possible. Once construction starts, there is no turning back. This bill will help us keep these projects moving forward and help keep those promises. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Sandberg. Questions of either Representative Szymanski or the testifier, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've been seeing a plethora of these bills in the last couple of weeks dealing with continuing appropriations in the event of a shutdown. I mean, it's almost like we're planning for shutdown 2.0. I know in the past, Speaker Swigum has been very much against these and has raised the fact that we're putting government on autopilot. And I'm not that I'm opposed to this coming from the construction industry. I know exactly what you're talking about. Our window for somebody, especially for road construction, is short. But I just want to raise that concern that, I mean, if we want to do this as a general authorization, I mean, there's been bills in the past that in the event of a shutdown or in the event of a budget negotiations not being done, percentage less than the full budget going forward. I mean, I can understand that, but we're seeing a lot of that. Is that a plethora of these bills? I think this is about the fifth one I've seen that is doing the same thing, and it's we're going to piecemeal this, and pretty soon every part of government is going to continue on without us having a budget, and it takes the pressure off us of having us do our job. So I just want to make that as a comment.
We'll take that as a thank you, Representative Nelson, for your comments. Further questions for Mr. Sandberg or Representative Szymanski? While you're thinking of those, let me ask if anyone else in the audience would like to testify for, against, or about this bill. Seeing no one coming forward, Representative Szymanski, you want to renew your motion that your bill as amended go to Ways and Means?
Mr. Chairman, so moved.
Thank you. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. I hesitate to say it this way. The last bill on the agenda today is Representative Gauthier. You're standing between me and lunch, Representative Gauthier. But I don't want to put the whammy on you or anything like that. So, Representative Gauthier, this bill will lay over for possible inclusion, but if you'd like to move it to get in front of the committee and the same pledge is made to you, if turbulence occurs, we'll send them on their way individually.
Thank you, Chairman Beard. I'd like to move House File 2512 for possible inclusion, mm-hmm. and then I also have an A1 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
You'd like to move the A1 amendment to?
I would like to move the A1 amendment, which is basically technical changes, changing dates and the word fees to fee.
Mm-hmm. We have that amendment in front of us. Questions to that, members? It's a pretty straightforward amendment. Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. House File 2512 is amended as you wish, Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to note, Mr. Chair, I tried to get cupcakes this morning, but they weren't open.
Those blueberry ones are deeply appreciated, Representative Gauthier.
I duly noted, Mr. Chair. Basically, what this bill does is modify rates in state statute charged by the State Patrol for performing escort services and non-vehicle escorts and flight services. It also allows the patrol to increase or adjust escort rates in future fiscal years equal to the cost of providing that service. With that, I'll just turn it over to the major.
Major Urquhart, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record and proceed, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ken Urquhart. I'm the major with the Minnesota State Patrol. Just briefly, Mr. Chairman, the last time the legislature addressed this issue was in 2007, and they adjusted our contract rates for fiscal year 2008 and 2009. So subsequently, based on a number of cost factors, fuel, maintenance on vehicles, and personnel, our costs have gone up. And what we're asking here to do is just recapture the cost we have by providing services to vendors through the rate that we present them when they ask for those services. And then subsequently, beyond fiscal year 2014, we're asking that if the commissioner can look at those costs and adjust those costs as need be.
Thank you, Major Urquhart. Questions for the major? I have just a couple while others are thinking their questions. On the portion under 117 to 122, I noticed this is new language and it's not striking anything. Have we set fees before in statute for the air flight services, helicopter fixed wing, and the twin, the Queen Air?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we have. Historically, the original fees for flight services fixed wing were about $140 an hour, and then, of course, the Queen Air was at $600 an hour, and then for helicopter support was $490 an hour. And subsequently, if I could have the commander of the flight section address any specific questions about aircraft rates.
I'm seeing them now. Okay, now I'm reading it a little more carefully. We did actually have those in statute, and this is an adjustment for those. Adjustment downward for the Queen Air. We actually got more accurate costing, Major?
Mr. Chairman, being a pilot yourself, what I was told there was that at that time, that aircraft had to have two new engines in place into it, and subsequently, as we depreciate that aircraft with the new engines, then those costs should come down.
That explains it to the Chair. Thank you, Major Urquhart. Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Major, how many escort duties do you do typically throughout the year? I mean, individual events.
Major Urquhart?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I can give you a rough number of hours we do by fiscal year that we provide different types of services.
That would do. Just some sort of measurement would be greatly appreciated.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, fiscal year 2010, we provided about 38,000 hours of rated activity, and in fiscal year 2011 was about 35,000 hours of various types of activities.
Follow-up, Representative?
Yes, Leger. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, do you know what percentage, perhaps, that would be in the total number of escort hours that happen on the highways? Now, I realize this might be a difficult one. What I'm trying to get at is, there's other organizations that also do escorts, is my understanding. Would you answer that first of all, please?
Major Urquhart.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, what I should clarify first is that these hours are not just escorting what you might think are oversized loads on the roadway. This is, for instance, when we conduct the MnPass activities for MnDOT. We do traffic direction for utilities when they're moving power lines. We do, for instance, when banks are taken over, they ask us to come in and secure a bank for a period of time until the auditors can conduct their audits. So there's a wide range of activities. Oversized escorts are just a portion of that. And I don't know what that number is, sir.
Representative Leidiger, you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. What other organizations have the capability or authorization to do these kinds of escort service duties?
Major Urquhart.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, depending on the size of the load or the move that is happening, there could be a wide range of different types of vendors that could do those. Sometimes MnDOT requires law enforcement on specific moves other than rather than other moves. So, for instance, if it's a smaller load that requires an escort, then you could have a private vendor do that, a licensed protective agent, or some other person that has a business in the, that does that. Or they can do it themselves, escort their own loads. If it requires a law enforcement officer, then of course that customer or that vendor can go to any agency they so choose to get a law enforcement officer. So it's really up to the customer where they go.
Representative Leidinger, follow up.
Just one follow up. Then with the let's talk about the pricing structure. Or how, where do you sit with your pricing as opposed to your competitors then? So there's competitors in the private sector, and I'm just curious, how does that stack up?
Major, can you speak to that?
Mr. Chairman, I have no idea where we lie with their hourly rates. I don't know that.
If I can follow up on that, the rates that we're setting here, though, are they asked or they're trying to an attempt to reflect the cost of providing a service where these troopers are required to provide? Is that what we're trying to do here?
Mr. Chairman, yes. We're just trying to capture the cost it takes for us to provide the service.
Thank you. Representative Benson.
Just a follow-up now to both of the questions that were asked. When you calculate, I know there's a number of factors that go into, you know, what that rate is. You talked about equipment and probably fuel, gasolines, and those things. But when you're calculating the work hours of the troopers, is that calculated at a premium rate? Is it at their overtime rate, their straight time rate?
Major Urquhart.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benson, that rate based on the personnel cost is determined by the average hourly rate of all of our troopers. So if, for instance, if we have more younger troopers than we do that are at lower hourly rates, then that rate is going to reflect that. But it does need to cover that premium hourly rate, which would be at time and a half, because that's what they're being paid at the time to do these kinds of projects.
Follow-up necessary, Representative Benson?
Well, I think it was clear. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. Is that when you're calculating, I know you have a pay scale depending on where they're at and seniority and longevity and so on, but it is taken from a time-and-a-half premium rate in terms of calculation.
Major?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benson, yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Schimansky.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Major Urquhart. In the bill, it talks about, in the new language, fees may be reviewed and adjusted by a commissioner of public safety in an amount equal to the cost of providing this service after the year 2013. It sounds like this is we're putting it on automatic pilot. The commissioner would adjust the rates. My concern is, would this the commissioner have the ability to also add in administrative costs, for scheduling and providing those things? And at some point, will this be brought back to the legislature for an oversight, to review the rates in the future?
Major Urquhart.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, from my knowledge, the rate we charge doesn't include those additional administrative costs to administer these kinds of details, as we call them. From my involvement in the legislation, the reason that was done was to allow us to keep pace with the increased costs. Right now, we're far behind that. And, of course, every time we put a trooper in the field now on one of these assignments, we're losing money. And that's the reason for it, is to try to keep pace with the increased costs.
Representative Schimansky, do you think it's appropriate that the aviation pricing is put on autopilot, or do you think that should come back here manually every year?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would, being a legislative body, that we should have some oversight on these numbers at some point, and whether it be on an annual report basis or of some sort.
Thank you. We'll take that as a comment. Further questions? Representative Biskins took your name. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, since some have spoken of your competitors, you're not actually out looking for this work because you're actually losing money at every escort. You are, in some of these instances, law enforcement is required to be there. It's not something that one could shop out competitively.
Major Urquhart?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, that's correct. I can tell you from my personal experience that vendors come to us and they've made comments that we want you because we feel you're the best and we're willing to pay that. No, we don't go out and look for this kind of activity. We just respond to the customer and say, this is what it costs to provide that service, and that's their choice.
Follow-up, Representative Hausman. Further questions for either the testifier or Representative Gauthier? Is anyone else in the audience want to testify for, against, or about this bill? Seeing no one moving. Major Urquhart, thank you for your comments and for shedding further light on the issue. Representative Gauthier renews his motion, and the bill is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Members, you've been noticing your email that there is a very important funeral on Wednesday, and the leadership of the House of Representatives has suspended all meetings up through the 4:30 floor session, which I'm sure will be a paper shuffling session on Wednesday. They've asked us not to conduct any committee hearings Wednesday before 4:30. We do have an agenda for Wednesday's work. I'm working with Committee Administrator Nisley, and would be appreciative if anybody has any strong thoughts or suggestions one way or the other. My inclination is to not meet Wednesday evening. However, I might be prevailed upon to have to meet Wednesday evening. Keep the our agenda going. We only have like five or six more meetings before deadlines, and I want to be careful that we work as expeditiously as possible on bills that the committee would like to pass. We could come back on Friday at some point. However, I'm looking at the members of the committee that are out-of-towners, and you're looking absolutely thrilled to be here on Friday. Oh, not. I'm misreading that. Misreading the expression, I see. Saturday work for you? No. Okay. Well, members, we could meet perhaps an evening next week or maybe Wednesday. Let me look at the agenda. Let me work with staff, and we'll try to make a determination. Please watch your emails or give me a call if you're in doubt about that, okay? Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, does hearing bonding bills, do they have to, they don't have to meet that?
Thank you for the question. No, I've been told that bonding requests do not have to meet deadlines. So we could take, if there's another bonding thing, a day scheduled before deadlines, we could put that off till after deadlines and be just absolutely fine with that. So we could use that day too, but I'll have to look at the schedule and see what Mr. Nisley has proposed for a program of work for us. Was it Representative Shemansky? Is that your hand I saw?
Mr. Chairman, if we were trying to work in some additional committee time, I would be opposed to meeting Wednesday night, but being a mid-distance traveler, perhaps a Monday morning committee meeting might
all right.
be essential or beneficial.
Thank you for your comment on that. I'll hold that as a possibility then, as opposed to Friday or Saturday, maybe Monday morning. Anything else for the good of the cause? Members, we got 5 minutes to make it to lunch. We are adjourned.